Welcome back, or welcome for the first time, to the Science of Sports Recovery podcast. I'm your host, Jace Kraft, and today we are diving deep into the conversation of motivation, logistics of going from amateur to professional, and a deep dive into the recovery routine of five-year veteran pro soccer player or football player, depending on what side of the globe you're on, Andrew Mullen. Andrew was a standout in college at Southern Illinois University Edwardsville and made his way into the Major League Soccer scene post-collegiately. He has been playing in the U.S. as well as Germany. And some of his highlights of achievements is he guided SIUE out of a 33-year NCAA tournament drought, made it to the Sweet 16 before losing to Wake Forest. He now coaches other athletes how to be the best on and off the field with the knowledge of sport, perseverance, and strength plus endurance. Let's get started.
You're listening to the Science of Sports Recovery podcast. Each week, we explore how to recover more efficiently from training so you can work out harder and realize your full potential. This is the Science of Sports Recovery podcast.
Hey, Andrew, it's great to have you on the show.
Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no problem. Well, we want to start by early childhood, Andrew. What, like, soccer obviously is now your main thing now, but was it from the very beginning, or did you have any other sports that you tried out?
Yeah, I'm thankful for my mom trying me. She said, "What do you want to play?" And I would choose something different every single season. So I played baseball, basketball, football, hockey even. I was in Florida, but we played hockey and roller hockey. And so I played that. But I remember, I actually distinctly remember, I always came back to soccer. I always came back to soccer and always wanted to play soccer. And then my dad has always been big in soccer, so I've always just sort of gravitated towards it. Yeah. But yeah, early on, I played basketball. Basketball was probably my favorite sport.
Okay.
But yeah, then it
always... How old were you when you decided that soccer was better than basketball?
Looking back, I was probably 7 or 8. And I remember I played baseball, and then I literally went from one baseball game to a soccer game, and I tried running. And my lungs just, I was just like, I could not run. And I was like, what is going on? I really felt unhealthy. And I was like, I want to play soccer. I want to play soccer, and I can't play baseball. I just sort of played baseball a whole season, came back to soccer, and I wasn't fit anymore. And I was like, I don't like that. I don't like that feeling. So I always played soccer.
Yeah. So what kind of leagues were you playing on then? I mean, 7, 8 year old, just, city leagues, or did you get to do any traveling with that? Or
so I started traveling when I was 9, I think I was 9 when I started playing actual travel soccer, where we actually traveled around. I actually had moved to Georgia by then, so we were traveling around Georgia, and that was I mean, that was just absolute heaven to me. I always wanted to play at that quote-unquote level, but
yeah
it was absolute heaven for me.
Was soccer, like, do you think you enjoyed it because you were good at it, or did you genuinely like the sport and then become good at it, as opposed to like baseball or basketball?
It's funny because I feel like I always had a knack for like getting like pretty decent at something. Like, as soon as I started playing baseball, I got really decent with it. I remember being obsessed with baseball. I remember like literally when I was at home, I would want my grandfather at the time, I would want him at the time to like throw me the ball all the time in the house. Like, I'd always want to throw the ball. And then when I got into soccer, always wanted to play soccer, always would be celebrating in the backyard and stuff like that. I would always be obsessed with whatever I wanted to do. And so I just felt like anything that I saw, basically it was ESPN, honestly. I was watching the SportsCenter, and I'd be like, oh, look at that catch. I want to go do that. I would do that, and it would turn into a month, 2 months of me trying to do that, and I would just end up getting good at it. And so at that point, I guess that soccer sort of broke through all that, you know, obsession with different things all the time. Mm-hmm. Soccer just sort of broke through somehow, and I was just always obsessed with that from then on. But I always seem to like pick up things pretty well.
Yeah. I had the same similar experience growing up. I was in a lot of different sports and I played them all pretty well, at least right. for the league that I was in. And then it was, for me, it was, I could excel at running because I didn't have to have that team. And I was in a small town. Right. Like yeah. I didn't have to count on anybody else. So running was that, you know, kind of like, okay, where I can do this now.
Right.
And then it just kind of, you know, snowballed for there. So I didn't know if soccer, if you had like a better team or if it was just, right. you know.
No, it's funny because I would play on any team. That was the thing is like my dad would be coaching and we'd be at the field for like 7 hours on a Saturday.
Yeah.
And I would play with every team. I was on the number one team in my age group, but then the number two team in the age group would come and play their game. I'd be like, coach, can I like jump in goal? Can I play? Can I do whatever? Like, okay, fine. The next team would come, the third best team would come. I'd be like, can I play with you? Like what position can I play? I would just be counting the players, be like, I hope someone doesn't show up today.
Yeah.
I'd be like the fourth team. Like these kids can barely kick a ball. And I'm like, I just want to play with these guys or whatever. But so it never really mattered what team I was on. I just always wanted to play. I always wanted to have a group of players and play, but it was funny. I was just talking to my fiance about this. Like if I could play any sport other than soccer, it'd be tennis. Cause I don't like the team. I don't like being in a team.
Yeah.
But I don't know how to describe it. I like being in a team, but I also don't like being in a team. Like you said, like I can just do this now. I don't need to rely on my team.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird thing. Cause I do like being on a team, but I'd like tennis better. Cause I could just focus on myself, but.
Yeah. So what is that like team dynamic like then? Cause at one end you're like, I need to make Andrew the best Andrew he can be. But then on the other end, like if you're the goalie, you know, you can't decide whether your forwards or strikers score and, you know, vice versa there. You have it's out of your control.
Yep.
So like, how do you deal with that as an athlete?
So the funny thing is, like, now that I've stepped away from the game of soccer, I see a lot of things that are similar and, like, relate to the game of soccer. So when I talk about, you know, working on myself and working on my own strengths and stuff like that, it's funny because it's a very individual sport. People don't realize this. It's a very individual sport. If Andrew's not good, he's not going to play on the team at all. So I have to be good first. And if I'm good, then the team is going to be stronger because I'm better. You know, one of my favorite quotes is a rising tide lifts all ships. And so if I lift my game, everyone else has to lift their game as well. And so it's finding that balance of fitting into that ecosystem, just like you would in a business, just like you would in at a hospital, if you're a doctor or whatever, fitting into that ecosystem, but still focusing on yourself and making sure that you're, you know, fit, making sure that your skills are at a good level, all that stuff. It's finding that balance. And that's where the team aspect of it comes in. It's very interesting. Like even golf or even tennis or any of the other sports we were talking about, you still need a team. You still need a coach. You still need a trainer. You still need doctors to help you and all that stuff. You're always going to find yourself in a team. So as far as what you were asking, it's finding that balance between working on myself, but also helping the team.
Mm-hmm. So what if somebody's finding themselves like, or maybe you found yourself in this situation too, where like your athletic ability is way above the rest of your team, but it's just the high school you were, you know, dealt or, you know, whatever your situation may be. Like, is it then more important to focus on your own skills still and just like take it to the next level? Or should you be more concentrating on, okay, how can I help my team get to my level?
Okay, so if we were in like the 1920s, I would definitely understand that. But the good teams know where the good players are, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, when I was growing up, yes, I was better than a lot of my teammates. But it didn't like when I was very young. I've been lucky enough to play on a lot of teams that I was not the best player. Mm-hmm. I've always tried to play on a team that I'm not the best player because that makes me raise my game. Also, it's kind of worked against me at times because when I am the best player for a short period of time, I don't necessarily play that well because I normally play to, you know, the level of my teammates. That's always been something that it's that yin and yang kind of thing where, you know, it's good because I want to play on a team where I'm not the best player, so then I have to raise my game.
Yeah.
But if you are ever on a team where either your team's number one in the league or you're number one player in the team, it's very difficult to like keep that level. Mm-hmm. But I've been really lucky to play on teams that I've almost never been the best player. I've always prided myself on being the hardest working player. I think in every team I've been on, I've been the hardest working player.
Yeah.
So that's what I pride myself on. I don't ever really want to be the best player on the team. That's mm-hmm. about it. But when I was younger, going back to your question, when I was younger, there were a couple of times when I was the best player, sometimes by far, and it didn't last long because the better team saw that, or, you know, my coach saw that and sure. moved me up immediately. But yeah, like I was saying, like, in, if it was the 1920s, then people would not know who you were. But right now with social media, YouTube, all that stuff, I mean, texting, even like all that yeah. stuff, people are connected. So they know if a player is good or not.
Yeah. I see it more where people get, or athletes get trapped in the younger age, you know,
yeah, exactly.
junior high, exactly. high school, especially like in the Midwest where you have, you know, a city population of 1,000 people right. or 10,000 people, you know, then there's not as much like you, some parents won't just, you know, go an hour to get it right. to a better team, right. you know? So in that situation, if somebody was stuck there,
yep.
what would your suggestion be?
Right. So again, I would definitely, and this goes for anyone, even if you're on a good team, even if you're on the national team, whatever, I would mm-hmm. leverage social media 100% and say you should be, you know, at least have a YouTube video of your highlights to where you can send, like, you can email every single coach in the US if you, mm-hmm. if you wanted to. So I say, you know, always start where you are, always start where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you're in North Dakota, with no one around you for hundreds of miles,
yeah.
but there's a team there, be the best player on that team. I promise you somehow your name will get out. In order to speed that process up, you need to have a highlight video. So, mm-hmm. Make sure you get film of your game, have a highlight video, and then you can accelerate that process by putting it up on social media, by connecting with people. Mm-hmm. Like I found my agent on LinkedIn. Like that's where we are now. We're at yeah. LinkedIn, we're on LinkedIn, we're on Facebook, we're on all that stuff. Trying, you know, everyone's trying to get the upper hand when it comes to finding good players. At this point, even if you're in the middle of nowhere, putting out a YouTube video, as long as you have an internet connection, yeah. put a YouTube video out. You know, build up your social media, all that stuff. And you'll create, you know, something for yourself. You'll create a profile yeah. for yourself and people will notice.
Yeah. So let's talk about that for a little bit. Cause I think yeah. the use of social media is underutilized by athletes looking yep. to go pro in whatever their sport is, right. you know, whether it be football, soccer, running,
or college.
Yeah. So you seem like obviously you used it.
Yeah.
How should an athlete think about
right.
social media when it comes to taking their game to the next level?
So it's both ways. Like I just got off that webinar with my good friend who's an agent. And we were talking about how he looks at, if you contact him as an agent, if you contact him, the first thing he does is he looks you up on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, all that stuff, just mm-hmm. to get a feel for who you are.
Yeah.
Like, first of all, what do you look like? What is your style? He even said that he looks at it to see your lifestyle. Like, are you serious about soccer, or is it all about, you know, the clothes, the cars, all that stuff? What is it about for you?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, there's nothing wrong with being yourself. And this is where I'm saying pull from both sides. It's not about what's right for you. It's doing both ways. So it's like, do I put half soccer, half style? Do I put all soccer? Do I put all style? It's like, you know, you have to have that both, like, give me the full picture of your life. Don't just give me the style, but also give me a little bit about, oh, you're training hard in the off season. That's great. Good.
Yeah.
And then you can post a picture of, you know, hanging out at a restaurant or whatever, like be yourself, but yeah. also be professional, right? You can't just be, quote unquote, all yourself. You have to, you know, be professional, but also be yourself.
Yeah. So what I'm Well, I'm hearing you're saying, you know, when you reach out to somebody, whether it be a college coach, whether it be an agent, whether it be a professional team, you know, they're going to use that as kind of a to get to know you tool, because I'm sure they get, I mean, they get reached out to all the time.
Right.
So how are you setting yourself apart from right. there to even get a look back at?
Right. Right. So like so first and foremost, make sure that your social media is, first of all, up to date. Second of all, and a little side note. If you have a private social media account, it doesn't look good. It doesn't look good when you have a private social media account. We're kind of past that as a society, mm-hmm. I believe. So that's not an excuse to like say, oh, you know, it's private. Like it doesn't count. No, it doesn't look great. Also, I would say, you know, in order for you to get in front of someone to differentiate yourself, like you said, is to make sure that you're actually trying to create a connection with someone. You're not just using them as a means to an end. People can read that. People can see through that. It comes off as ingenuine. It comes off as, you know, just another kid, right? Mm-hmm. Like immature kid trying to, you know, use a college coach or use a pro coach to get what they want. They want to be a pro. Okay. And they can do that for you, but you have to create a genuine connection and, you know, I'm trying to think of an example of like what that would be, but it's like, you know, if I, you know, there are people who spell my name wrong in emails. There are people who, you know, my dad's been a college coach for the last, you know, he was a college coach for 25 years. He's gotten many emails where they spell his name wrong, mm-hmm. or it's clear, or it says insert name here or whatever. And it's like, obviously you're just sending this to thousands of coaches.
Yeah.
Take time. And research the program. If you're talking about college, if you're talking about pro, research mm-hmm. the history of the club. You know, truly put time into them because you want them to put time into you. Mm-hmm. If you don't know anything about the club, if you don't know anything about the coach, if you don't know where he's coached, you don't know the players that he has or anything like that, their recent fixtures, whatever.
Yeah.
Then why would they want to look at your email, and why would they want to put time into you? So, you know, the age old adage, like you get what you get out what you put in. It's mm-hmm. so true. You know,
yeah.
You want them to look at your stuff, but you're not going to look at their stuff. It doesn't make sense. So in order to differentiate yourself, I guess going back to what you said, in order to differentiate yourself, I would say first and foremost, you got to have highlight video. We're in a video age now where coaches want to be able to click,
yeah,
watch 3 minutes, get a taste for what you're about. And also they want more, right? So you got to have highlights, but you also have to package it properly. So you need to have an email that's genuine. You have to have
not like Smarty Pants 269 or
exactly. So you have to have some sort of, you have to have a professional look. You have to have a professional look about yourself.
Yeah.
One of the greatest things I was ever told was, you know, you got to be a pro before you become a pro. In college, I was a pro 2 years before I went pro because mm-hmm. every single day I was putting in the work. On the field, but I was also putting the work off the field, making sure that my, you know, my name was synonymous with, you know, quality, you know, on time, the way I dressed, all that stuff had to be on point because you have to be the thing before you become the thing. You have to be a pro before you become a pro. So I was always making sure that I was doing the right thing so that when I made that jump, it wasn't hard for me. It wasn't new to me. So, I'm not about this, you know, believe it and you'll achieve it. It is true, but you also have to work for it.
Yeah.
But for some reason, it just works out. Like I was training every single day in college, making sure, cause I wanted to go pro, and it happened. Like it just happened.
Yeah.
If you put in the work, you think it's going to happen. You create that professional vibe around you. It'll happen. So
yeah.
In order to differentiate yourself, you have to be a pro. You have to be that 1%. There's mm-hmm. less than 1% make it. So you have to do what the other, you know, I just saw it. You have to do what the other 99% aren't willing to do.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll talk a little bit more about your training here coming up, but
yeah.
From a marketing background, I have, you got to ask like what's in it for them. That's what like a coach is going to, or a scout or what have you is going to be asking. How are you going to benefit my team?
Exactly. And going on that, I would always think, like, early on in my career, when I was a kid, I would always ask, because I went to England when I was 14. And when I went there and I tried out and I, you know, they're like, yeah, that's great, come back next year. So at 15, I went again. But at 14, I asked my dad, like, why did they not want me so bad? I felt like I played well. Yeah. He's like, you can't just play well. You have to play better than what they have. Why would they bring in a kid from America who is just as good as what they have there?
Yeah.
Right. So when kids say, oh, I played decent, I played well. Well, no one wants to invest in well. No one mm-hmm. wants to invest in decent. They want to invest in better than what they have. Exactly. So whenever you're going on a trial, whatever it is, going up for a visit, or if a coach comes to watch you and you're not dominating, why would they take that chance on someone who's mm-hmm. just decent or just the same level? They can find players who are better. So yeah. you gotta go in with the mindset of, if a coach is watching me, if a coach wants to watch my film, then it has to be better than what they have.
Yeah. And going and leaning into like your strengths, especially in team sports, like how are you going to, you know, benefit their team? Is it your speed? Is it your, you know, knowledge of the game? And then how can you demonstrate that through the highlight reels? I would assume it would be advantageous to you to put into that initial contact, whether that be email or DM or what have you. Exactly. Would you suggest like DMing coaches and that kind of stuff on Instagram, LinkedIn, or is it strictly like email is more professional?
So my big thing, and this is going back to like pull from both sides, is my college coach told me, once you get out of college, it's the wild, wild west. Anything can happen. Yeah. Anything can happen. I was like, okay, whatever. Sounds good. But people will, like, it was crazy because people will promise me things like, oh yeah, we'll sign you next week. Never hear from them again. And it's like, but then I just got callous to it. And I was like, nothing's 100% until it's on paper. So yeah. When you talk about, can you DM or not? It's the wild, wild west. You can do whatever you want. it, for me, it's like, if it works, great, try it. If it doesn't work, then don't do it. You know, yeah. I've been saying the quote recently by Bruce Lee. He says, if it's useful, keep it. If it's not useful, discard. So mm-hmm. it's like, you know, if it works, like try everything. I'm a big believer in try everything. If you DM a coach, the worst thing that's going to happen is he doesn't answer, or he mm-hmm. answers and says, don't DM me. That's the worst thing that can happen. But yeah. the best thing that could happen is you get a contract from a DM. So it's try it. I think people are caught in the analysis paralysis of, should I do this? Is this more professional? Is this more professional? Just try something. And if it doesn't yeah. work, then go back and do something different.
Yeah. Done beats perfect.
Exactly.
You do it. It's better than, you know, exactly. It's better to do it 10 times than to do it perfectly once.
Exactly.
Okay. So in your college career now, yeah. you know, you helped your team go from a NCAA tournament drought to making the right. you know, Sweet 16 and
right.
and all that kind of stuff. When you came in as a freshman, were you know, kind of top of the team leading right from then, or did you have to work into that? How was that going from, you know, high school type league yep. to college for you?
So the best thing that's ever happened to me, and I thank my dad for this, is I actually went to a boarding school in Minnesota for all of my high school. So for 3.5 years, I went to a boarding school in Minnesota. I never played traditional high school soccer. Okay. I played in the best league in the US for clubs. So we played mm-hmm. against MLS clubs. Right. So, I played there, and so I never played high school. So my senior year, my team made it to the national final. And so I literally went from the national final into preseason with my college team. So I was coming off, you know, the highest level you can possibly be here in the US.
Yeah.
I was able to, you know, make the all-star team for that as well. And so I came and I went straight into college, started my first game. That, you know, one of my coaches said that was one of the best games that he's seen a freshman play. Mm-hmm. So I'm riding this. Like I played every single game, you know, just absolutely loving college. Right.
Yeah.
Went to, you know, got to travel to California for the first time and all this stuff.
Oh yeah.
We won in California. So I was just buzzing the whole year. It's unbelievable. We didn't make the tournament that year. And I've always been a player that, you know, I've always failed, but then I've always learned from it. And then the next year is always better. So then my sophomore year, we did make the tournament. We had a great team, you know, a few MLS players on there as well. And so we went to the tournament then. So my freshman year was absolutely perfect as far as like playing time.
Yeah.
You know, I played every single minute as a freshman. That does not happen. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was good and it was bad. I just, you know, you learn much more from failure than you do from success. So having a successful freshman year was great. You know, perfect. That's exactly what you want. That's the goals you set for yourself. But it led to, you know, some hardship down the road.
Yeah. How but, so?
Yeah. So sophomore year, we made it to the tournament. That was a great year. We actually started 0-9.
Wow.
It was crazy. We went to the conference tournament, made it all the way through. Luckily enough, I got on the Sports Center with 2 assists in the semifinal and the final. Nice. Made Sports Center top 10. And I mean, after that, you're just going to school. You're like, you know, I'm just a man. People, oh, you were on Sports Center. Yeah, great.
Yeah.
So we went to the tournament. We won our first game in Northwestern. And then we moved on to California. So literally we went from Northwestern, where it's -2 degrees. And then we went to California, 70 degrees. So it was very, very tough.
Yeah.
Lost to California. But my college career, I had 4 head coaches. So a new head coach every single year. So I had to deal with that. Junior year, we got, you know, in my opinion, the best college coach in the game, as far as I'm concerned, Mario Sanchez, who came in and was literally, you know, he was high, he was very high on me, thought I was a good player, had seen me play, actually recruited me as a freshman, or recruited me in high school to go to Louisville. Didn't work out, but now he's at SIUE. And, you know, we had a rocky relationship in college, but senior year was tough. 2 red cards in the season, and then also had a broken arm in the season as well. Still made it to the tournament. Still made it to the Sweet 16, you know, so I've never been a guy, like I said, I failed, but I learned from every failure. So my junior and senior year, you know, I played probably the same amount of games as I did my whole freshman year, probably. And, you know, then I had the injury, then I had the red cards, still made it to the Sweet 16. Looking back, you know, him not playing me all those games, because he sat me out most of the games. I went on like an 8-game streak where I didn't play.
Yeah.
And that's new to me. That was new to me. I had played in almost every single game since I was 14 years old.
Yeah.
But, you know, for some reason, I don't know why, but I came at it with maturity and I said, you know what, I'm just going to be a great teammate and work hard in practice. That's all I can do. That's everything I can do. And so I did that. And then senior year came, did well, left college, had no prospects whatsoever because, in my opinion, I felt like because I didn't play junior and senior year, but looking back, the lessons were far, far bigger than just soccer that I learned by sitting on the bench. Right. So that's why my first podcast episode was Sitting on the Bench. What a Blessing, because
it was just,
I didn't know it at the time. I was angry, horrible, horrible time at the time.
Yeah.
But looking back, it was the best possible thing that could have happened to me. So super blessed that happened.
It's crazy how in an athlete's life, something like that, you can learn so much from rather than all your successes. I had kind of a similar story through my college career. It wasn't because the coach kept me out, but it was because I had some sort of health issue that was just like not going away. And I went from, you know, coming in as a freshman, placing in the top 5 on our team, you know, going to nationals, becoming an All-American. And then my junior, senior year, like it was hard for me to break 4:20 in the mile, which, you know, I'd blow out of the water all the other times, you know.
Right.
But I learned more through that
than
I did in all the successes, what it meant to be a teammate, what athletics really actually teaches you in life, you know, about motivation and all those kinds of things. So
if you stick around and listen to enough of our episodes here on the Science of Sports Recovery podcast, you'll notice a common theme of importance of mobility in recovery and injury prevention. That's why I recommend checking out the Ready States Virtual Mobility Coach to help you improve your mobility, recoverability, and injury prevention. The Ready State is a brainchild of coach and athlete Dr. Kelly Starrett, who you can learn more about on episode 13. His virtual mobility coach program helps athletes understand the importance of recovery, pain relief, and self-care. In other words, it helps fix the recovery side of training so you can keep seeing results from your workouts. His program will guide you through the same mobilizations used on athletes in the NFL, NHL, and MLB, provide custom tools for pain relief, give you customized pre and post exercise mobilizations based on your training and sports schedule, and deliver daily mobilizations to keep you on track to achieve your goals. You put your heart and soul into your workouts. Make sure you get the most of them by going to thereadystate.com/Jace. Again, that's thereadystate.com/JASE. The link will also be in the show notes. Now, back to the show. But I want to talk about motivation, because I think a lot of times athletes get, you know, one of two things on motivation. One, they're really hard to motivate, like themselves. They want it, but they like not want it. And then the other side is like they want it too much, and then they don't think about their recovery and like,
right,
you know, you're a human body with human body rules that you need to, you know, adhere to. So how did you kind of have that balance when, you know, as a freshman and then as a senior, when you weren't playing as much, knowing that you had to act like a professional before you got there?
Right. I mean, there's a lot there. So my biggest takeaway from 2020 was actually the idea of yin and yang. Right. So like you said, And also, I don't necessarily believe in motivation. I don't like motivation because it's just a feel. It's a feeling that comes and goes. I'm huge on inspiration because that's the spark. It's well known that inspiration is the beginning of the process. It's not the whole process. Motivation is like, people are like, oh, I'm losing motivation. Yeah, you're losing motivation because it got hard. It got hard for the first time. So you're like, oh, you know, I lacked quote unquote motivation in college.
Yeah,
but going back to your question about how did I juggle that? It's pulling from both sides again. Like I had to realize, because freshman year, I went to England again to play with the same team as like a last, like, let me try, you know, get my visa and all that stuff to try to go pro in England, but didn't work out. So I came back, I was 19 at the time. So I had to realize that, okay, I'm going to have to go through this college process. At first I thought I was going to go freshman year and then be gone, but I had to realize, okay, now it's time to, you know, dominate where I'm at. And so freshman year, I was just focused, no partying, no nothing like that. I was focused and I was very uptight. You know, I was going to bed at like super early and I was waking up super early. Like I was just quote unquote motivated. Right. So came back and I, you know, a little bit of shock, like, oh, I might actually be here for a while. So, you know, I started loosening up a little bit, hanging out with my friends a little bit more, you know, actually going to parties and stuff like that. And I realized that it's about that balance. It's about the balance of being able to, when you're focused, you're dead focused, the most focused person on the field, the most intelligent player on the field, the hardest working player on the field. Those are my three things: focus, hard work, and then intelligence, right? So those are my three things. And once I started nailing those down and realizing that, you know, what my strengths were and focusing in on my strengths, then it just changed the game. And I was able to, when I'm at the field, this is what pros do. I'm at the field, I'm giving it 110%. Everything, I could die out here, right? I could die out here putting in this work because I'm willing to do whatever it takes. When I leave the field, I'm shut off. Like even now, if I'm not, you know, doing a call with a client, or if I'm not coaching on the field, I don't really think about soccer that much. I'm focused on my fiance. I'm focused on, you know, personal development. I'm focused on all that stuff. I'm not necessarily focused on soccer as a game. And that's just a professional mindset of understanding that when we're here, we're focused, we're tuned in, we're ready to die for whatever we have to do.
Yeah.
But when we go home, we're relaxed, we're chill. So it's finding that balance again. Yeah. And I think that serves most players the best.
How do you turn your mind off like that. Because, I mean, right. you get done with the game, you want to rehash the game, you talk about the game, whether you had a good game, then you're telling everybody. If you had a bad game, you're like telling yourself over and over.
Right.
How do you do that as an athlete?
So for the people who don't know, I basically, train players in video analysis and understanding themselves. First and foremost, understanding themselves and self-assessing. I found out that I have insomnia after a game. I cannot go to sleep after a game. The adrenaline's pumping, all that stuff. So I literally chalk up the next day to absolutely just sleeping. After a game, I have to watch the game. So I've been lucky enough to play on teams that as soon as the game's over, it goes on YouTube or ESPN Plus, right? So as soon as the game's over, I have my phone out and I'm watching the game, because I will literally lay in bed and be like, did I do the wrong pass? Did I make the wrong pass there? Did I miss that? Was that my fault or was that my other center back's fault?
Yeah.
So I can't do that. So I watch the game and I make sure that, okay, that was that. I get an overview of the game. So I go to sleep. I figure that out myself. Otherwise I'd be laying in bed, I'd be up all night and all that stuff. Now I'm lucky enough and, shout out to my fiance for this, but I can come home and, now I have to make dinner. Now I have to, walk the dog or something like that. I've never been a guy who's been super I've been obsessed with soccer and stuff like that, but I've never been a guy who's gone out to eat with my friends and been like, oh, I wonder how to juggle three more times than I'm juggling now, or like obsess over like free kicks or something like that. Like, I've never been that guy. I always know that like when I'm working on this, I'm working on this. Or if I'm doing the dishes, I'm doing the dishes. Like, I've always been able to look at the problem at hand. And I've never really had to quote unquote, shut off. I've always been able to shut off. I can always shut off. I can always go to sleep other than after games. I can always go to sleep. Like, I never lay awake thinking about things. Like, I can always shut it off.
Yeah. So it's more about knowing your tendencies.
100%.
Like, I mean, you knew you weren't going to go to sleep after a game anyway. So why not, watch the game or do something to help you, relieve those thoughts.
Right. I've always been solution oriented. Right. So it's like, I have insomnia. I don't lay in bed and just be like, oh, I wish I didn't have insomnia. No, I'm like, why do I have this? Okay. Yeah. So I need to watch the game. I need to make sure that I didn't make that mistake. Like, they scored a goal. Was it my fault? Let me check real quick. And I check.
Yeah.
One time I called my coach out, 'cause he's like, oh, the last 15 minutes of the game, we were being dominated. And I said, coach, I just watched the game and I realized that we had most of our shots in the last 15 minutes. I don't think you're telling the truth. That got me in trouble. But at the same time, I have to know. I cannot rely on other people to tell me certain information. I've always been that way. My mom's always taught me that just because someone says something doesn't mean it's the truth. Go look it up. Go check them.
Yeah.
So I've always 100%. Been like that. Always been like that.
I interviewed Gary Reinel, which I don't know if you know who he is, but he's the anti-ice man. But in episode 11 or episode 10 or episode 11, he has a two-part one, but he tells a story about how he got bluffed by this other guy in high school, and it demotivated him not to try.
Right.
And,
100%.
And I think that's a good lesson, or string of a professional mindset being, don't let, know yourself and then don't believe what other people say just because they said it.
Right. I think it's huge. I heard something recently, curiosity over intelligence. So for me, it's like someone who wants to find out is always going to find out more than the person who just knows. Right. Yeah. So it's like, if I'm a curious guy and I want to know how an iPhone works and I pick apart an iPhone, now I can literally make an iPhone if I wanted to, or make a phone or something like that, as opposed to the person who says, this is an iPhone. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We know that that's an iPhone, but can you make it? Do you know what's inside of it? Do you know all the, because the guy was curious.
Yeah.
Right? So that's definitely exactly what you're saying. If you take something at face value, you don't know if that's going to work. And it gets me in trouble sometimes. Like, I'm the type of guy that, you tell me the stove is hot, I'm going to be like, yeah, let me just check. And I check. Okay, you're right. It's hot. It burnt me. But now I know for myself, I know for a fact that that is hot.
Yeah.
That's how I've always been. And I, credit my mom to that.
Yeah. So if you're listening now, you're probably like, okay, this is a recovery show. Why are we talking about this? But you can take the same mindset
for sure
to recovery. I mean, curiosity over intelligence. You can know all the physiology in the world.
Right.
You can know all the studies in the world, but then your body is different than somebody else's body. You know, so being curious with what is happening to you after workouts, what is happening to you after games and stuff, that's going to lead you to personalize your own recovery routine to yourself and to make yourself better that way. I'm curious to know kind of what your mindset on recovery or what your recovery routine was during college and now professional. Like, I mean, what tools, what tactics do you use?
So yeah, that's a great question. Like you said, I've tried a ton of things. Obviously, I've been playing soccer since the first day of playing soccer till now, 21 years. So I've been doing a lot of, you know, learning about recovery. And like you said, like we said, intelligence, is knowing, curiosity is actually doing. So it's like, I had to figure out what was right for me. I've been in situations where we had no recovery tools. I've been in situations where we had all the recovery tools in the world. So it was me, you know, it was funny because sometimes having all the recovery tools in the world is harder than having no recovery tools.
Yeah.
So I would say just in general, the recovery tools that have helped me the most is contrast bathing. That's my number one. That's the one I go to, you know, almost religiously. I'm almost religious about that, whether it's contrast showers or contrast baths. Those are the most important for me.
And what do you mean by that? How do you do that?
Right. So what I mean is one hot, one cold, get in and out. And for me, the time period for me is 1 minute in the cold, 2 minutes in the hot, 7 times. That's my routine. After a game, I'll do, it's normally in the shower because, you know, it's way easier to do that where you don't have to, you know, make a bath basically. So it'll be hot, you know, 1 minute in the cold, freezing cold, and then 1 minute or 2 minutes in the hot, scalding hot. And it's funny that you talk about the guy who's talking about anti-ice. I'm so against ice. And again, I'm not a scientist. I have no quote unquote education in this. I've just tried it. Yeah. And I know it was funny because, you know, it was right before right before preseason in 2019. I sprained my ankle. I was training with my trainer and I sprained my ankle. We're talking about 2 weeks before preseason where I'm reporting. This was our last training session together. And I came home and my fiance was like, you know, you got to put ice on it. You got to put ice on it. And I said, no, I'm not putting ice on it. So I didn't put ice on it. I did elevate it. And the next day I put just a little bit of weight on it. Like I would just, you know, sit up and put a little bit of weight on it. Great. That was like, literally that was my goal for the day. Put a little weight on it. I did that a couple of times throughout the day. Yeah. The next day, you know, I got up and I just walked. I walked from, you know, one side of the room to the other side of the room, just steadily working my way up. By the end of the week, I was sprinting, you know, up the hill and stuff like that. And again, I'm not a doctor or anything like that, but I just believe that, you know, the body is an amazing, amazing thing that, you know, what would happen if that was me, you know, going against a saber-toothed tiger? I think that I would be able to outrun a saber-toothed tiger if my life depended on it and had a sprained ankle. I think I'd be able to run. Maybe not outrun, but I think I would be able to run and not even worry about the pain. So I was like, okay, I think putting ice and all this stuff for me doesn't work because you're changing the way the body's recovering. Yeah. So,
well, you have to go listen to those episodes then you'll understand why that actually worked better than icing. But you were talking about contrast showering or bathing. Why do you like, what benefits did you feel that it got you?
Right. So for me, it's about and this is just how I think about it. You know, I've obviously read papers on it, read books on this and stuff like that, but I see it as a pump. I see it as, you know, vasodilation, vasoconstriction over and over and over again creates a pumping effect.
Yeah.
And for me, you know, I'm trying to get as recovered as quick as possible. And the mindset that changed for me as recovery, because all young kids, we don't do recovery. Like, yeah. we go, we play, we go to bed, we wake up and we play again. Like, that's just how we lived.
Yeah.
As I got older and as I realized, you know, I want to be like, once I started getting in the gym, I think it was, and realizing that, oh, I'm sore, like I can't even walk today or whatever.
Yeah.
Now I realize, okay, I want to walk today. I want to get better. Like, yeah. I want to go to the gym today. So how can I recover quicker? And I realized that, you know, I wanted to be able to allow the body to do its thing and pump blood, and inflammation is not always a bad thing and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to do all that. And so I was like, basically researching, like, how can I speed up the process, basically? Mm-hmm. And I found that, you know, for me, ice slows it down. Ice is the opposite of inflammation. I wanted my body to be able to recover and build muscle back again, whereas ice will stop that process. And mm-hmm. so I was like, okay, I don't want to just take a hot bath, because, you know, it's not necessarily like, now you're going to get really sore the next day. So I was like, okay, I need to work on both. So I worked on both and it just worked. Like you said, it's like, try, if it doesn't work, do something else. If it does work, keep doing it. I've been saying that all week, and that's exactly what I've been doing. That's exactly what I've done.
So it's interesting. I actually haven't talked to anybody who does contrast bathing. Right. Is there anything else that you do in your recovery routine?
So even now I do rolling, 100% rolling, foam rolling. I don't do it very often. I don't do it very long. I probably do it, you know, in the morning. I'll do my back, make sure my back is rolled out, because sitting all day, my back gets, you know, sore. And then I make sure I do my legs, obviously. And then I'm done, like 5 to 10 minutes maximum, because I'm huge on time. And as much as I would love to give more, and I do need it, where I need to roll out and like really, you know, stretch and all this different stuff, I just don't. And like, that's just my mindset. Is just my brain's like, we got to be doing other things. We got to do other things. There's other things need to be done. And so I at least get 5 to 10 minutes of just rolling in the morning, my back, my legs. Mm-hmm. And then I'm good to go. But yeah, rolling has been huge. Rolling is huge.
Cool. Anything else that you did, during your collegiate or professional
years? So in college, I was lucky enough to have like actual like physios and trainers that would help me. So I would get a ton of stuff like stem, ice, you know, all that stuff. So mm-hmm. I always had that, heating, all that stuff before training and all that stuff. But I always found that I didn't want to use that if I didn't have to, because mm-hmm. what if I went to another team and I didn't have that stuff? Now I'm reliant on that.
Exactly. Right?
So there were times when I, for some reason, I always hurt my ankle at least once a season. So I would get my ankle taped. I'd be deathly terrified of the idea of me having to get my ankle taped for the rest of my life, because one game, my trainer doesn't show up with the right tape, I can't play. Are you kidding me? So I realized that as soon as I got, like, I had my ankle taped because I literally couldn't walk without it taped.
Yeah.
But once after the game or the next day, I made sure that I got my ankle workouts in, made sure that I strengthened it, because I've always looked at it like, I don't want medicine. I don't want any apparatus to help me to play the game. I want to be able to do it myself. I want to have strong ankles, because I've played with guys who have ankles of glass.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, you know what? I don't want to be that. I don't want to rely so heavily on my ankles being taped to play the game of soccer.
I had this conversation with Sandy Gross. I'm blanking on the episode number, but I'll link it in the show notes. But the discussion was high tops versus low tops in basketball. Like, should you do it? And her stance was like, she likes the low tops in practice, like when you can control the situation and stuff. Yeah. But then when you're going to the games to have as much protection as you can, because you can't control the other team.
That makes sense.
You're going to put yourself in situations that you're not going to be able to control as much.
Basketball is one of those sports as well, where you got people running a million miles an hour and then jumping from that. Like, it's just like, there's so much shock that's going into your knees, that are going into your ankles and stuff like that, that I would be like, I have to get my ankles taped. I have to have high tops, because I just could not imagine not having like some sort of help with my ankles and my knees. Like the pound, like I said, I played basketball for a long time and my knees were just done. My back, like, it's a tough sport. It's a tough sport.
Yeah. I played basketball until I got too short, man.
Exactly.
So cool. Let's see. Well, we're getting towards the end of our time here. So last question for you, as far as your biggest piece of advice for somebody who is at the collegiate level looking to go professional, what do you want to leave them with? And then we'll get into how we can connect with you.
I mean, there's obviously a lot of things. There's a lot of nuance in, you know, different situations, people coming from different areas, like someone from Europe is going to be a lot different than someone in America. Someone from Pennsylvania is going to be a lot different than Florida. Like it's all, there's a lot of nuance to it. But first and foremost, I would say two things, and I've been saying this a lot, pull from both sides, right? So first, you have to work hard. That's a given. Everyone knows that you have to work hard.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't work hard, talent will take you so far. I posted on my Instagram the other day. I said, literally, like, luck will take you. Luck doesn't work in the long run. That's it. Like, your talent will not keep you in the game. It'll get you to the game, but it won't keep you in the game.
Yeah.
But so hard work is number one. And like I said, on both sides. So hard work on the field. Obviously, if you're not good enough, you're not going to, you know, you're probably not going to play at the highest level or wherever you want to play. Going pro, I think you said college to pro. So if you're not good enough, you're not going to play pro. And that's skill. That's a skill thing. That's not talent. I'm not talking about talent. I'm talking about skill. Skill is acquired. Skill is something you work on every single day and you gain and you acquire. So I'm not talking about talent. So when people are like, oh, like when I say you have to be good enough, people are like, oh, okay, well, I guess, you know, that might be me. It might not be me. No, you can be good enough. You can work to be good enough. And then the second part is working off the field, right? So when I say working off the field, like we were saying at the beginning, if you want to play pro, if you want to, you know, be on a professional team and get a contract, you have to put in the work in terms of emailing, getting a highlight video, at least getting your CV together. Like the amount of times that I was talking to my friend who's an agent, and he was saying, you know, the amount of times people call me and they're like, hey, I want to play at this club. And they're like, okay, great. Send me over your CV. And he's like, oh, I don't have one. Or, okay, send me over your highlight video. Oh, I don't have one. How do you, like, what do you want other people to do for you if you're not going to do it for yourself?
Yeah.
No one's going to believe in your dream more than you believe in your dream. So if you don't believe in it that much, what I mean by believe in it is not that you believe in it up here, but like, what are you doing to show people that you believe in your dream?
Yeah.
You have the necessary materials. Like even the little kids that I coach, I want to make it to the next level. Okay, great. Where's your ball? Oh, I don't know. I didn't bring it. How are you trying to get to the next level? I don't understand. So
yeah,
work hard on the field, work hard off the field to prove that you actually want this. Most players have it down in college. Most players who want to go pro, most players have it down on the field. They work hard. They're good people.
Yeah.
Off the field, you got to get it together. You got to be a pro off the field and make sure that you're sending the emails to the right people, sending the correct emails, you know, building relationships, all that stuff. Work just as hard off the field as you do on the field to make it happen.
Awesome. So you mentioned your business Vast a little bit in the episode as well, but tell us, like, what are you doing with athletes? Right. How to connect with you?
Yeah. So, you know, I feel like I'm one of the first in the game in terms of going the video analysis route. And what I mean by that is, you know, I believe that whether you have your own game film or you have to get it off of YouTube, either way, there are things for you to learn. Right. So, you know, you're at the level you're at because of the decisions you make. So if you can make better decisions, you can have a better situation. So when you watch a game on YouTube or watch a game on TV or whatever it is, stop watching it as a fan, start watching it as a student. A lot of players, they, you know, I told them one day, like, if you want to watch it as a fan, then go ahead, watch it, put your face paint on, do whatever you want.
Yeah.
But you're not going to come out of it a better player.
Mm-hmm.
I've created a method and a system that I've given out for free. You know, I have my free ebook. I have all that stuff on my Instagram, and it's all based on making the player better through self-assessment. That's the most important thing for anyone, whether you're a CEO, whether you're a doctor, whether you're a baker or you're a soccer player. Knowing yourself is the first step to improving yourself. I always use the analogy. how do you get to the grocery store using your GPS? How do you get to the grocery store or the place you're having to have dinner if you don't know where you are currently? How you have to have your current location in order to get to where you're going.
Yeah.
So you have to know who you are. You know, you have to know your strengths. You have to know the things that you need to work on. You have to have a plan in place before you can go and actually improve and get to the level you want to get to. So basically what I do is I help players look at themselves and say, these are the three things you need to be working on all the time. Obsess over these three things. And, you know, I've actually been blown away because I started this in March and, you know, I've already had 100 plus clients. And a couple of them have messaged me back and said, you know what, like, I got man of the match. I got MVP of the game last week. And it was, you know, thankfully to you or whatever. And I was like, first of all, you did the work. You went out, you got it.
Yeah.
But I appreciate it. And it definitely, it's about changing the perspective, right? So it's about changing the way people look at the game, look at their situation and stuff like that. Because once you look at the game from a broader sense, now it's way easier. You know, players get too focused on, first of all, working on their weaknesses, which makes no sense to me. I heard a quote the other day. It's, you know, don't strengthen your weaknesses, and which will weaken your strengths.
Yeah.
Right. So don't weaken your strengths by strengthening your weaknesses.
Yeah. And it goes, so, I mean, full circle from what we talked about before with telling people how you're going to make an impact on their team with your strengths. So your Instagram, I believe, is Andrew_Mullin. That's MOULLIN.
Yep.
And then you do have a podcast called The Offside Podcast.
The Offside Podcast, yep.
And then do you have a website, or where can people connect or find out more about your video analysis?
Right. So I have a website. It's at videosoccer.com. Sorry. Videoanalysissoccer.com.
Okay.
My main Instagram page is at smart soccer video on Instagram. I mainly use my Instagram. That's my number one way of connecting with, you know, my group, my following, all that stuff. For young players, I have my group chat. All that's on Instagram though. All my links are on Instagram. So Instagram is the main hub. But yeah, that's where you can find out basically everything about me. All my links are there.
Awesome. Sweet. Well, it's great having you on this show, Andrew.
Appreciate it.
We'll talk later.
Yep.
All right. Episode's over. If you found value in this episode, please consider giving us a review on iTunes. And if you haven't already yet subscribed, do so now so you don't miss any important topics in the coming week. And if you have any questions or suggestions for the show, please send them my way. I am most responsive on Instagram. That's at jcheese, J-A-E, cheese, like the food, or email me directly at jase, J-A-S-E, at scienceofsportsrecovery.com. Talk soon.